So we often call what we're doing here in following the Buddhist teachings, we often say that we're following the path, that this is a path. So it's a good idea to think about what we mean by a path. A path implies that we're moving forward in a particular direction. So we're not standing still, but we're moving forward, we're moving ahead. So we could say that this practice is a path, or it's a journey. It's a journey of awakening. It's a journey of awakening. This journey of awakening, it said, begins with suffering. We talk about this a lot, that it's really our suffering, our pain, that brings us to the path. You know, we're looking for a path to the end of suffering. We're looking for a way out of suffering. So it's our suffering that brings us to the path. So I've often talked about my own process in finding the path, that happening at a time in my life when there was great suffering, when I was really struggling and really having a hard time. And, you know, to some extent, it just felt like my life was to some extent, I felt like I was dying. I mean, my life was in such bad straits and so much difficulty. And I was really at kind of a personal bottom. And then there was this remembering the wish that I had to be happy, remembering that life was supposed to be something more than suffering. You know, that there was this suffering that I recognized clearly, but at the same time recognizing that life was meant to be more than suffering, and remembering, as a young man or as a adolescent, let's say when I was in high school, or at that time, thinking that wow, life is going to be great, and there were so many horizons and dreams and things that I was going to do that were going to really be wonderful, and boy, this isn't how it was. So it's that sense and understanding of suffering and sense that there's something else that brings us to this path, and this sense that, oh, I can find a way out of suffering, that there is a path, there is a way out. But again, we tend to come to the practice, we tend to find the path, we seek out the path when things are difficult. We may be in a deep hole. We may be in a deep hole in our lives, and we need to climb out of this deep hole. So this is all certainly part of practice, finding ourselves in this deep hole and wanting to climb out. As we move along the path, it may seem to us, or the way that we may perceive the path, the journey, is a way that we can follow, a path that we can follow so that we can avoid disaster. I've talked about this before. You know, it's the perception of the path as a way to avoid disaster, to avoid blatant suffering, to avoid taking actions that cause blatant suffering, to be able to avoid strong, extremely painful expressions of anger and desire. You know, and a lot of times as we start on the path, I mean, that's a lot of what we're doing. We're pulling ourselves out of this hole, and, you know, the first movements are often in the service of not acting out blatantly and rashly on our unskillful tendencies, if it's anger, if it's things like that, sort of that blatant, or forms of desire, that sort of blatant acting out, if you will. And certainly, again, this is part of the path, to climb out of the hole, to avoid disaster, to avoid actions, behaviors that have disastrous results, to learn to refrain from highly unskillful actions. You know, this is part of the practice, but there's more to the practice than simply avoiding disaster. There's more to the practice, there's more to the path than simply climbing out of a deep hole. You know, the practice, the path also includes getting up out of that hole and standing in the sunlight. You know, experiencing the warmth of the sun, celebrating life, experiencing the joy of living. You know, the practice, the path includes change. Change. We just don't avoid difficulty. We just don't prevent ourselves from doing things that are highly unskillful. We change. This is a path in which we change. This is a path in which the Buddha asks us to change. We change. This is a practice, a path of transformation. So it's really important to take that to heart. You know, a lot of what I want to talk about in this talk is how do we perceive our practice? I mean, this is really what it's about. Do we perceive it as a way to avoid disaster, as a way to, an emergency modality? You know, I'll go to the breath in an emergency, or the practice really helps me not to act out on anger. You know, which again, that's part of it, but do we also perceive the path as a way to change? A way to change. So this is one of the really noble intentions that we can have as Dharma students, is to have the intention to change, to have the intention to change, and to move in that direction. As we move along the path, we're moving along this path of transformation. You know, and we can change. You know, we can change. You know, at the risk of I always talk about this, but at the risk of talking about myself, which I'm going to take the risk, I know that in my practice as I follow this path, I've changed. One story that that kind of means a lot to me in terms of embracing this truth that I've changed is a story that includes a very dear friend of mine, somebody who I had grown up with, went to elementary school with him, so on and so forth. We actually went to college for a while together. Our first year of college we went together, then I transferred, then he transferred. He transferred out to the West Coast, and after that I never heard from him. At some point he had moved back to New York, but I had never heard from him. And about 10, 12 years ago, I got a message from him. I hadn't heard from him in many years, probably 20 years. And he had seen my name in terms of seeing that I was teaching some meditation classes. I don't know if he saw it in a publication or whatever, but he saw, wow, he's teaching these meditation classes. Maybe I'll give him a call. Maybe he's changed. You know, seriously. And he tells this story. He said, you know, I really had kind of avoided trying to get back in touch with you, even though we had known each other for all these years, because you were really a difficult person to be around, and I didn't want to hang out with you. You know, he could tell me this because he saw that I had changed. But you know, basically, what he said was, you know, you were very angry, very cynical, you know, and unpleasant to be around. Very intensely cynical and angry, and this is a guy who, you know, he's sort of somewhat naturally at ease with himself and skillful. But he said, you know, I saw that you were teaching meditation. I said, I'll give it a shot. Maybe he's changed. Maybe he's changed. And he told me subsequently, you know, it's really startling how much you've changed. And as he liked to say, you know, most people don't change. You know, you're one of the few people, he said to me, that I've actually seen that changes, that's changed, that there's been a real sea change in you. And I mean, that was it's a little painful for me to hear how bad I was before, but it was also just really, you know, it brought me a lot of joy to see that people recognized that there was, you know, a significant change. And of course, I tell this story because through this practice, we can change. I mean, what my friend said was largely true. People don't change. I mean, if you've gone to like your high school reunion, it's like 30 years later, it's like people are exactly the same. They're exactly the same. You know, I mean, it's like, it's crazy. They have no hair, whatever, but they're just the same. And that's going to be true. We're not going to change unless we do something. You know, the path offers us a way to change, a way to change. The Buddha's way is a way of change, a way of change. And of course, change happens on the Buddha's path by changing our minds. What we change is the mind. What we change is the mind. So this is so different than the way we might perceive how change occurs or how we might affect change. I mean, we tend to think, if I change my job, I'll affect change. If I change my relationship, maybe that's what I need. If I change my apartment, new clothes. What did Thoreau say? Don't change your clothes, change your mind. The clothes you have are fine. The clothes you have are fine. Change your mind. You don't need to change your clothes. You don't need to change the furniture. Change your mind. So change occurs in this practice by changing our minds. We have these minds that are so prone to clinging, and we've done so much clinging and so much suffering, so much desire, so much aversion. So as we follow this path, we change because we begin to cling less, we suffer less, there's less aversion, there's less desire in the mind. And as we follow this path, we begin to develop a mind more informed, imbued with compassion, with love, with joy, with equanimity. This is the great change that we make. It's obviously a change that doesn't take place by saying, just have more compassion, be more loving, take joy. No, there's a process that we go through. What we seek to teach here is this process. So when I think about what we're going to study and what we're going to do in this group, and when I design the curriculum for the group, that's the intention behind it. It's not how many, what can I do so more people come? What can I do so, it's going to be fun and da-da-da. I mean, it is going to be fun if we do change, but it's all about what do we need to learn? What do we need to do in order to suffer less, to experience more happiness so that we can change? So for me, it's really paying attention to where people are and the skills that we need to learn in order to change so that we can move along the path. So these skills that we teach, meditation, breath meditation, what we're doing today, natural meditation, learning to stay with the breath, learning to maintain the breath, practicing heedfulness, which we've been working with so much, being able to pay attention to all of our actions, physical, verbal, and mental, seeing if they're skillful or unskillful, learning to develop skillful intention, as we talked about in the class this week, learning to be able to see what's in our minds, to develop a skillful intention, attention imbued with love and compassion, to act and to continue to pay attention to see if we are staying with our intention, to see the benefits in our skillful actions, to take joy. These skills that we're learning are skills that we learn in order to affect change, so that we can change. The skills themselves, there's a certain element of skill in terms of understanding the knowledge of the skill, and that's why we have classes and we give Dharma talks and things like that. And, so we try to, do a good job. And, part of my focus as a teacher is to, do what the Buddha said, which is to offer. And he said, this is what a good teacher should do, offer a step-by-step instruction to students, not just say do this, but offer step-by-step instruction. So we seek to offer step-by-step instruction, but without making a pejorative statement. I mean, the instructions, it's not rocket science. It's not really rocket science. I mean, it does require some understanding. An understanding of the steps and the processes will develop over time. But really, probably what's more important than anything else is making the effort. That's the real challenge for students, is to make the effort. If we really want to change, we have to make the effort. We have to make the effort. Like a day like today. It's like, you guys made a lot of effort. I mean, this requires a lot of effort to do what we did today. Most people, you ask them, civilians, people who aren't meditating. I was going to say householders, you know, like real householders, you know. You ask them, oh, I'm not going to do that. Meditate all day? Are you kidding me? That seems like a lot of work. Ask them. You know, so, I mean, this requires a great effort to do this. You know, so it's important that you acknowledge the effort that you make in doing this. You know, in making this, in doing this practice requires great determination. Determination to just keep showing up. I mean, this quality of determination is this effort that we make over the long haul. So, you know, it requires making effort today, but you know, ongoing. A lot of people here, I mean, have been practicing for years. You know, and even the people who are newer, you know, the people who are here, you know, they continue to show up. They continue to show up. You know, I always say for myself, I don't think it was, you know, I mean, I have a pretty good understanding of the Buddha's teachings and the skills, but primarily, you know, that doesn't really mean that much. I mean, for me, in terms of how I've been able to change to the degree that I have been able to, is because of the effort that I've put up in and the determination. And, you know, mostly it was just like showing up. You know, there'd be a class, I'd be the first one there, showing up, whatever. You know, not feeling good, you know, a couple of people here have colds or whatever, they're here. You know, I mean, that's determination. We show up. Rain, that's not going to stop me from coming to a class and doing what I need to do to train the mind and to change. I'm going to show up. So, you know, I think in our group we have a lot of, not just in this group here today, but in our group as a whole, certainly in this group today, but in our group as a whole, we have a lot of people who have this quality of skillful effort, of determination, who just keep showing up, who are making this noble effort. You know, it brings me great joy when I see people making this effort, and I see it. You know, so much determined effort that you guys make. So the Buddha said, you know, we can change. He said, I wouldn't teach you these skills if you couldn't learn them and couldn't teach them, and you couldn't affect change by learning these skills. So I say the same thing. You know, change is possible. We can change. Now there's often doubt, you know, even as we're talking about this, there may be doubt. Oh, yeah, everybody else here could probably change, but not me. I don't really have the capacity to change, you know. And, you know, so we have to watch that doubt, right? I mean, that's really the important thing, is to watch the doubt. Maybe there's doubt in the path itself. Well, I don't really think that the path, you know, and, you know, that comes up for us, right? And maybe in a global way, but, you know, breath meditation, maybe that's not really, you know, step three, step two, I mean, that's what the Buddha taught. I mean, that's the path, but sometimes we have doubt in those things, right? Or natural meditation, you know, I mean, a lot of people start off with doubt in that until they see how valuable it is. Heedfulness, what's it? What's that? You know, looking at my actions. You know? So sometimes we have doubt in the path. And then, of course, there's times when we have doubt in ourselves. Well, again, I can't change. That person can change. Somebody else could. It's not going to happen for me. So we doubt our capacity to change. You know, unless I go to a monastery and become a monk, I'm not going to be able to change. That's one we hear a lot. We think about that a lot. Or if I didn't have kids and could go on more retreats, I could really change. Or if I'd come to the practice when I was younger, you know, then I could really be a yogi. You know? That's all doubt. That's just Mara. You know, all of that is Mara. There's no validity in any of that at all. It's all Mara. It's all doubt. But you have to see Mara, right? We have to see Mara. We have to question Mara. You know, is that really true? You know, am I going to listen to what you're saying? You know, there's people who, you know, may have heard Mara today. Ah, why bother to go on that retreat? Ah, that's not really going to do you any. You're really not going to be able to change. Go shopping. Shopping. Get those new clothes. You know? Oh, of course, we have these fixed ideas about ourselves. You know, this self, self-idea, this self-identity, this self-view that we have, right? That we've been building and building and building, and it's become very concretized. You know, our self, this idea of our self in our story is very concretized. So we have a very fixed idea about what we can do and what we can't do. You know, we've developed this self-image, this self-view, this persona, if you will, which is just an idea, and part of that idea is what we can do and what we can't do. And part of that idea for many of us is that, well, this is who I am, this is who I am, this is who I am, and it's only going to be that way. It's not going to be anything else. This is who I am. This is how this idea of self has become so concretized over the years. It's like we have this self, we have this story, and this is my story. And I'm just going to play it out. I'm just going to play it out. You know, so we feel so conditioned, you know, so really condemned to our story and to our self-identity. This is who I am. This is who I am. There's no room for change. This is who I am. This is what self does. It takes the truth of the way things are, which is that life is in a constant process of flow and change. And because of our fear about that, we create a fixed identity and a fixed story. Okay, this is who I am. This is who I am. So we feel condemned. We feel incapable of doing anything, you know, other than what we've been doing day after day after day after day. This is our story, and there's nothing that we can do about it. This is nothing we can do about it. I had shared in one of the Dharma talks recently about a term that a dear friend of mine, who's a professor of psychology at Holy Cross, uses, narrative foreclosure. You know? It's like we have these narratives, and you know, we become locked into them, and then we just foreclose. You know, that's it. You know, and part of that process of narrative foreclosure is, I've evolved to the point that I'm going to evolve in this life, and I'm not going to change anymore, and that's it. End of story. Let's just play it out. Play it out. So this is what happens when we cling and create thought worlds and narratives and create this self-identity. We stop growing. We stop growing. You know, so this holding on to the story and clinging to the story and the concretization of the story and the self is a prison. You know, it's a prison. You know, we're not free. We're condemned to our stories and this self-image. You know, Buddhism, we hear this talked about, you know, it's a path of finding freedom. Well, what does that mean? Freedom from the self, the self-identity, the strictures, the prison of the self, freedom from this story that's just like this tape that plays over and over and over again. That's what freedom is. That's what this path is about. It's a path of freedom. Freedom from the story, freedom from the self. So we have to be very heedful. We have to pay attention to our stories. We have to pay very close attention to our stories and see our stories for what they are, stories. And to understand what creates our stories, which is our holding on to different things, different mental states, different views and opinions. You know, the story concretizes because, you know, I mean, first the story develops through the ways that we cling, our liking and disliking. I'm a person that likes this, I'm a person that dislikes this. I'm a person, you know, all those views that the Buddha says, you know, I'm a person that is like this, I was like this, I'm going to be like this. You know? So, you know, and so we cling to, you know, this, I like this and I dislike this, and then we cling to, this is who I am, this is who I've always been, this is who I'm going to be, these beliefs that we have about ourselves. You know, so we have to see these beliefs. We have to see the way that we create likes and dislikes. We have to see these beliefs and question them. See the nature of this thinking. See that this thinking is just the process of our conditioning and our karma. I mean, why do we have these thoughts about ourselves? Because we just had them at some point. Maybe somebody told us something and we believed that. We started to develop these ideas about ourselves based on things that we did in the past, and we started to believe that this is who we are. You know, but are those thoughts about ourselves, are those beliefs, those views and opinions useful? Are they true, or are they just ideas that we've decided to hold on to and have become concretized? Is this really true in terms of who we are and what our story is and has to be? So we have to see these stories, we have to see these narratives, we have to see these thoughts that we have about ourselves, and we have to start to have an open mind, and start to live in the questions, live in the questions. Can I bring about change? Am I condemned to this story? Am I condemned to this particular self-view? Is this the way it's always going to be? Am I just going to continue to play out this narrative? Now, when we start to kind of ask those questions, there's a lot of fear, right? There's a lot of fear of change. I mean, this has been our story, this has been our identity, so certainly fear is going to arise. What we're doing is we're giving up our familiar moorings, or as we like to say sometimes, we're giving up familiar pain, or being asked to give up familiar pain. I mean, no matter how painful it is, it's still familiar, right? The story, the sense of self. So to give that up, there can be a lot of fear in that, or to begin to start to move into the unknown is fearful. There's uncertainty there. At least there's certainty in knowing, well, if I play out this story and if I'm this person, at least I have a sense of certainty. As we move along the path, I mean, any path, any real path, you're moving forward into new territory. This is what change is all about. So there's a certain kind of acceptance that we need to have, that we're going to have to meet the unknown. We're going to have to meet uncertainty. We're going to have to be with uncertainty. And understanding that moving forward and along the path is going to be informed by uncertainty. That's a mark of wisdom. That we can have that kind of wisdom. This is the way things are. I mean, they're the way this way anyway. That things are uncertain and unknown. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen when we think we do, right? You don't know what's going to happen when you. I mean, you don't know what I'm going to. I could pull out a cell phone in a minute and start talking on it. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what's going to happen, right? Anything could happen. Anything can happen. Now, this is the truth of the way things are. The more we can embrace that, what Alan Watts had that great book, The Wisdom of Uncertainty. The wisdom of one of my favorite books. I love that book. The Wisdom of Uncertainty. There's a real wisdom in knowing that uncertainty is the way things are, and can we embrace that? Now, a lot of what we're doing in practice is developing the strength so that we can meet the unknown. We're developing the inner strength so that we can meet uncertainty. This is what we're doing with the breath. The breath gives us a refuge so that we can move forward, we can move down the path, we can do things. I mean, that manifests sometimes really simply when you have to do something that's fearful. You know that you have the breath as a refuge. You know that you don't have to move into that fear, you can stay grounded in the breath. You don't have to try to embrace the fear, you can put the fear to the side and stay grounded in this refuge. That you have this inner strength, this equanimity in the breath, that you can keep your mind in a safe place. This is the kind of strength that we're developing to be able to move ahead, to be able to meet the unknown. We're developing the inner strength that comes from being heedful. If we have this groundedness in the breath and we move into the unknown, we can notice when we begin to go into a fearful place. We can begin when we notice to start to go into anxiety. We can see what's in the mind, so we don't get ambushed. We don't go into those patterns of fear and anxiety and get caught by those things. We don't go into self-views that are fixed and concretized. So the skills we're learning are skills that give us the strength to move ahead. I mean, this is what happens in practice. This is when practice becomes so joyful and so wonderful, is that now I've got these skills where I can really start doing something with my life. I can really start. I mean, people say, well, Buddhism, oh, it's passive. I'm never going to accomplish anything. I'm just going to sit around and be happy and it's like, no. It's all about accomplishment. It's all about change. It's all about moving forward. We're developing these skills. Once you start developing these skills, it's like, oh, I can do this because I have these skills. I have this refuge. I have these skills of being able to be mindful and heedful. I have the skill of being able to connect to the heart, and to act out of love. So then it becomes like, wow, I can do this. See, that's conviction. You start to get conviction. It's like, I can do this. I have the skills to do it. It's like you can't have conviction unless you have skills. You know, it's like a good baseball player, you know, it's like really good player, you know, it's like he knows he's hit a lot of home runs or struck out a lot of guys, he's got conviction. He knows that he's good. You know, it's like you guys are good. You just got to know it. You've got great skills. You can move ahead. You can do things. You can change. But developing this incredible strength that we're developing. So can we open up to the idea that we can change? You know, I know it's possible that we can change. I know it because I see people changing. I see people changing in this group. I mean, as I said, one of the great joys, one of the great joys is seeing the effort. Another one of the great joys of being in this seat and being the teacher and watching everybody. And one of the great joys of this group is that people have been coming 5, 10 years or whatever, so you get to see people change. You know, it's not like somebody comes for a class and I don't see them. I see them over 5, 10 years. You know, and I've seen people change. I've seen people change. Such a blessing to see that. You know, and of course, you know, the people who I've seen change are the ones who show up, who've been showing up, who are making the effort, you know, as long as they, you know, and people have been coming to these day-longs for years, you know, month after month after month, you know, and those are the, you know, I really see incredible change in the people in our group, and they just keep showing up. You know, that first change that takes place of calmness, we become more calm. Become more calm. Gradually, we begin to start to develop this groundedness, and you know, I really see people abandoning unskillful action. Somebody recently was saying to me, you know, I've been working on abandoning some unskillful habits, some unskillful things around precepts and things like that. You know, and finally, it's just starting to happen because of the work that I put in, the wisdom I developed. It's really starting to happen. You know, so, you know, I hear these stories all the time. We're learning to relate to others with more love, with more compassion. People come in, they talk about, oh, I'm relating to my partner. You know, my relationship with my partner wasn't so good. Now it's really coming together. My kids, I'm really, you know, learning to be with my kids. My parents, you've heard me talk about. You know, I mean, I always talk about my difficulty with my mother. Without this practice, I mean, I wouldn't even be talking about it. I mean, I would be, you know, I mean, it's completely enabled me to have a relationship with her. I mean, we actually have a pretty good relationship. It's difficult, but that's through the practice. Somebody was saying to me just the other day, you know, she was saying that, you know, I'm really starting to make better choices. I'm starting to choose things that are good for me. I'm starting to take actions that are good for me. I'm starting to choose things in terms of my work, in terms of the relationships that I decide to get in that are better for me. I mean, this is extraordinary. This is extraordinary change. So I have no question that you can change. Now, sometimes I have question whether I can change, you know, because of course it's harder with ourselves, right? You know, our greatest challenge is with ourselves, you know, to get past the thoughts that we have about ourselves. You know, my thoughts about you guys are, you know, you guys are great. I know you can change. Sometimes my thoughts about myself aren't as praiseful, you know, and are more judgmental, you know. And of course, I'm really invested in, you know, self and my story, you know. So I'm not so invested in your stories. But I'm so invested in mine that sometimes it's like, well, I don't think this story can change. I'm condemned to this story. I'm condemned to this self-identity, narrative foreclosure. You know, it's like, you know, particularly when, you know, as I got into my 50s, you know, it's like, well, it's over. It's over. I'm not going to change anymore. It's like, when I was younger, so I know we have some younger people, when I was younger, it's like, everything's cool. I don't need to grow, you know. And then I got older, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm not going to grow. You know? So that's kind of how we tend to be. You know? So, you know, we just have to see the doubt. We have to see the thoughts that we have about ourselves. You know, the doubt, the thoughts that we have about ourselves, even the self-identity, the stories aren't a problem as long as we start to pay attention to them and start to understand them and start to find release from them. I mean, we're learning those skills so that we can do that. And I really think, again, as I was saying before, in describing the spirit of this talk, is that we have to be proactive. We have to assert that we can change and that we want to change. You know, and you can look around at others. You can look around at people in this group and say, wow, these people have changed. You know, the Buddha's stories are, of course, you know, rife with stories about people who had all kinds of unskillfulness in their lives and did all kinds of terrible things, and they found the Buddha's teachings and they changed. But you don't even need to read those stories. Just look around the room. Just look around the room. Have this intention. Have this intention. Have this high expectation that we can change, that you can change. The practice is not just about avoiding disaster. It's not just about getting by. Oh man, if I could just get through this day, if I could just get through this week. Right? That's a lot of our attitude about life. It's more than just about getting by. It's more than just getting by. Now, this is what this path is all about. It's about change. This is what life is all about. It's about change. It's about growing. It's about evolving. Now, this is what we're meant to do as human beings. We're meant to grow. We're meant to evolve. This is how we actualize ourselves. This is how we make the most of our lives, not by acquiring more sense pleasure and making more money, by growing and evolving, by growing. This is a practice of change, of growth. Now, of course, we can't do it by ourselves. You're not going to be able to grow and change and evolve by yourself. You know, we all need help. We need the help of teachers. We need the help of wise friends. We need the help of our peers who are following the same path that we are. It's a path that isn't meant to be followed alone. You have to follow it with others. We help each other. We support each other, like a day like today. Some of you may have done days on your own. I mean, it's so much easier and more joyful to do it together. I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's easier, because it's more joyful, the mind brightens. We support each other in being able to do this. But this is the practice. This is why the Buddha, the first thing that he did when he decided to teach was start the community, start the Sangha, the monks. He said, you know, I'm going to be teaching this stuff. They're not going to be able to do it unless they're part of a community and they're doing it together. You know, so with this collective strength, you know, there's this inner strength we develop, but there's this collective strength, you know, that we have. You know, we need each other. You know, together we can do this. Together we can do this. We can do this. We can change. As Thoreau said, we must learn to reawaken and keep ourselves awake, not by mechanical aids, but by an infinite expectation of the dawn, which does not forsake us in our soundest sleep. I know of no more encouraging fact than the unquestionable ability of man to elevate his life by conscious endeavor. You know, the unquestionable ability of woman to elevate her life by conscious endeavor. You know, so the path... You know, there's this path, this journey of reawakening, right? Reawakening. Reawakening. What has Thoreau said? To reawaken and keep ourselves awake, this journey of reawakening. You know, for myself, you know, it was like I thought I was dying, you know, and then I reawoken to the fact that, you know, there is a way out and I can change and life can be extraordinary and beautiful and great. You know, so this is a journey of reawakening, of continually reawakening. It's a journey of change. It's not about changing the scenery, you know, not about changing the apartment. It's about changing the mind, changing the heart. It's the change we make inside. It's a change in this practice that we're asked to make in every minute, every moment. Changing the mind, changing the heart, the change inside. So, you know, as I was working on this talk, I was trying to come up with an ending to the talk, and usually I'm really good at coming up with endings, you know? And I was like really having a hard time with coming up with an ending to this talk, and I realized it's really not a talk that should have an ending. You know, it's not a talk about endings, it's a talk about beginnings. It's a talk about going forward. It's a talk that really, the spirit of the talk is that it's an invitation. You know, the path, the practice, the journey is an invitation. It's an invitation to the journey of change.